Mr. Sherlock, reel 5. Before we leave Bizerta, I believe that there was quite a lot of air raids while you were there. Did that have much of an impact on you? I mean, it was your first time under fire, really.
I don't remember that it did particularly. Obviously, it was the first time that we had been, most of us had been subject to air raids. But we were very busy getting up, training and so on, and also getting to know each other, as it were, that I don't remember being dreadfully worried by it.
Was it high-level stuff, high-level raids, or were
they? Yes, that's right. No levels. I remember being a good deal more worried by the mosquitoes and the flying beetles and things like that.
You didn't like that? They were a nuisance?
Particularly at night. Particularly if flying beetles were inside the mosquito net, we didn't like it at all.
Was malaria seen as a risk from the mosquitoes?
Well, of course, yes, it was a risk because we were all taking Mepican tablets as a precautionary measure, but we still had the odd case of malaria.
After the briefing, then, which you had into the invasion plans, what do you remember about the next phase and setting off?
Well, I remember a certain amount of excitement. About it. We had to get to know the commanders of the landing craft, for instance, LTIs, and they were American. And we were surprised, in a way, at their very casual way of dealing with things. But in fact, they were nevertheless very good, and going across, we had a very rough passage across. Many of us were sick, and that's unusual in the Mediterranean, but that was so. But we must have got over it because we had breakfast of flapjacks and people. Then, as we approached Sicily, which by then was in Allied hands, of course, we did a bit of bathing in the sea off the ship, and just at that time, of course, Italy packed in, and so the actual timing of the landing was slightly moved. So we went into Sicily, disembarked for a few hours, bathed in the sea, then got back on and went into land. And that was September the 9th.
Now, you actually landed on D-Day in C Company, I think.
Yes.
What do you remember about the actual landing, as you saw it?
Well, I seem to remember, this is a funny statement, I seem to remember doing the whole thing in a slight daze. I think I was the first platoon off the ship, and we went straight across the beach.
Was it under fire at all? Because you weren't the first wave, were you? I mean, yes. The Hampshire had landed, but
we were in the centre of the company going across. We knew there was a possibility of mines on the beach, but we just had to go. There was no messing about, and there was a fair amount of firing coming across, and this to some extent surprised us because we had been told that the Italians had packed in, and we didn't know that there were going to be the Germans had sort of pushed away in and were waiting for us. So we were a bit surprised to find that there was a certain level of
shelling
and firing.
Was the fire direct fire, or was it indirect onto the beach? There wouldn't be actually people on.
No, it was indirect, insofar as it was probably mortars, a bit of six line firing way back, things like that. But there was certainly a certain amount of ammunition flying about. And
so you crossed the beach.
Pleased to get across the beach and into the field on the far side. Melon fields and things like that. Once we got in there, the fire finished for us for the time being because it seemed to be concentrated on the beach. We knew that some of the people on either side of us were in difficulties. But we actually got into the fields and got down. But unfortunately, the company couldn't find the rest of the battalion. And we joined up with he was the Brigadier Harding. What did he was saying? We were 139. He was 138, so I think 138 must have been on our left hand. We joined up with his lot, and he was able to help us forward and get together with our own people. But of course, the rest of the battalion didn't come in until the next day. And stuff. But I think there were three companies who went that went in the first wave.
Now, during that day, was there much actual contact with the enemy, or was it just
not direct contact with the enemy? But there was a certain amount of firing and sort of mortar shelling and that sort of thing.
Were you firing at anything? Not personal, but was your...
Well, they must have been firing at what they could see, you know. But we kept our heads down.
Were you digging in?
We didn't dig in very much. In fact, we could get into... In the melon fields, you'd get into sort of trenches, which were almost already there. You find things. And as long as you kept out of sight, you're fairly safe. And that's what we did.
Now, so, after the initial confusion, when that night, and then you'd rejoin the battalion when they landed next day, would you?
Yes. We got reorganized the next day. And we were posted onto what was known as Hospital Hill. Top of Hospital Hill.
Now... That was to the left of the Avellino Road, or
that's right.
Now, could you describe? Because that's it's quite an important feature of
yes.
What happened there. What do you remember about Hospital Hill and where the C Company's positions were and the rest of the battalion? Just as you remember it, you know.
It was a hill with a scrub on it, and from it you could look. Right across the Avellino Road, and you could see a main road going up the hill on the far side for a couple of miles. On this side, we knew that other companies of the battalion, the Daniel Corps, were behind us. And we could look across from this side at the hospital over sort of half right. Was a company of the York and Lancs. with and Brigadier Joe Kendrew was their brigadier. We saw a fair amount of them. In the book, I know it tells you about what A Company did. I can't tell you exactly what they were doing, but as far as we were concerned, I was called back from the platoon. Before I say that, there was a lot of shelling on the position, and it was my first experience of being shelled in that way, and I was surprised to find that quite a number of the younger soldiers who had already been in action took very badly with it.
In what way?
One young fellow, and I had to guess how to handle it, started screaming. I remember just giving him a good cut in the face, and he stopped screaming, but we eventually had to get him out of the line, but he cooled down. But some of these chaps, in fact, more of the chaps who'd been in the line than the chaps who hadn't been, took badly with the shelling. I suppose they were probably, they'd seen more what happened when you were shelled than we who hadn't been in action before.
How did you feel about it yourself?
I was and am a great fatalist, and I have a very, very strong faith too. I'm not saying that I wasn't frightened. Of course, I had the same sort of fears and apprehensions as anybody does when this sort of thing happens. But I refuse to let it worry me, put it that way. And so I always get through things that way. I think it is just sort of ingrained in me. My mother always used to say, you can't help being frightened, but never should it. And I didn't. At one stage, I was called back from the platoon to an O group.
Could you just explain what an O group is for them?
An O group. It's the group called by the company commander to issue orders. And whilst I was back there, I went, got my orders. My batman and I came back up to the platoon division and were suddenly shot at and discovered that whilst we were away, the platoon division had been taken over by the Germans. I may say I moved very fast back to where I'd come. Fell over a small cliff in the process. Never mind, we got back. I told the company commander what had happened. And just to illustrate how the sort of theoretical tactics which you're given are a little misleading in that way, I talked about what we should do, and I badly wanted to have somebody behind my platoon, not appreciating, of course, that there were other parts of the company that were behind the platoon. And I remember the second in command of the company being a bit concerned because he couldn't understand why I wanted to put people in a particular place. But I'd always learned that I had to watch my backside, you know. And I, at that stage, would have been putting people where they were totally unnecessary. Anyway, we got a few people together, went back and we cleared the Germans out. And that was my first, you know, hand-to-hand fighting.
Do you remember anything about that fighting or what happened to you?
Well, I can remember one single isolated instance that I personally was going forward with a 38 pistol hand, which is a useless instrument. And as I sort of crawled up, as what was the trench, and I put my hand over it, there was a German helmet came up, and I immediately just pulled the trigger, so, and I shot him. Not very straight, but just. And you know, I had a horrible feeling. It's me. But, that was the first time I'd ever been face to face, and it was fortunate I had shot him because if I hadn't, he'd shot me. It didn't take us long.
How many had you got together? How many people had you got together for this counterattack?
A platoon. I took about two sections of my own who got out and got back. And I took another couple of sections from somebody else.
And did the O group go forward? The other officers?
There was another two platoons, you see, in the company. And one of them was just behind, and one of them was over there. It was just my section, my three sections, rather, who'd been overrun.
How had that happened?
I think just taken unawares, inexperience, probably. I don't know what would have happened if I'd been there. It was just my back and I went there. But I think the Germans just came up. I think it was related to that A Company charge business there, where they were badly mauled and quite a lot of casualties. And I think probably that was the same crowd who moved over onto where I was. But we went long shoving them back, which is once we reorganized.
Were there many casualties on either side during this, you know, the initial breakthrough and then the counterattack? Or was it fairly sporadic fire?
So far as I remember, there was only two on our side. There were 200. And when we got rid of them, we found, I think, only one German dead. One German dead. And I think we didn't find any German wounded. It shouldn't have taken them off.
So the nature of the fighting was more of threat and counter. You know, people were sort of.
It must have been pure threat that chipped the bone. You know, because we didn't have any difficulty moving them.
And the same, both sides, yes, retreated before they'd.
It's surprising because the Hospital Hill situation was critical. Critical. It overlooked the road. It was. Whoever held that held to them. It's surprising that they moved quickly, but they certainly did. I think we probably outnumbered them, and I couldn't tell you because this is all in the dark. It's night time. I couldn't tell you how many Germans were there. But they seemed to be occupying, for the most part, our trenches, looking the other way. And so one would imagine that they were probably a dozen or more.
So what's the next thing that you remember happening? Because you were up there for quite a while on Hospital Hill, quite a few days.
That's right. We were there for about a week. Four days. The next significant thing I remember was connected with this road I told you we could see on the other side. Running up from the Abilene Road, a road ran straight up the mountain like that. And during the course of the next, the following day after this event I'm telling you, we saw German vehicles tearing up the road. There were a big convoy of them. I couldn't tell you how many, but there's not a lot. And I had with me a chap from the Gunners called Mike Frewer,
and he was from which unit?
He was from 149 Battery, 70th Field.
They were always your.
They were always with us. And we called on him to do what he could to do something about this, and he actually brought in. Like I remember this well. He brought the Navy in. He brought in the AGRA, the Army guns. That's 5 inches. 5 inches. He brought in his own field regiment, of course. And then, after we got all that on, he had a bit of RF. So we really did them an awful lot of damage. But it was that was first my first experience of using forward observation officer, and the first time I'd ever seen anything, any attack of that nature. It was very, very spectacular, and it gave me an insight into what could be done by the Royal Artillery by just having an FOO with you.
Now, what about during this period? Were you getting your rations up all right?
Yes.
But what
were... They were quite good.
What were they feeding you with at that time?
What we call combat rations.
What was that?
We used to get a box, which is full of tins of all sorts of things. And if there was anything we could eat, we had Tommy cookers with us. Things you could light, like little metallic spirit things. And we would heat meat and vegetable, tins of meat and vegetable stuff, stew steak, rice pudding.
Did you get any bread up, you know, or anything, or biscuits?
Any?
Bread?
No. At that stage, we didn't have any bread at all.
So it was just on the tinned food?
Yes. Biscuits.
What about water?
That came up. There was no problem on water. The water cart came up to company headquarters, and we used to go back and collect it. By and large, all through the campaign, with odd exceptions, the supply position was very good. Very good. I don't remember more than a couple of occasions when we had to rely on what we carried in our little packs, which was a box of chocolate, which was a box of hard chocolate, you know, a tin of hard chocolate, which I never opened. But we did have some hard biscuits, which I remember having to open once. Although I died a couple of times in the whole campaign. The rest of the time we got a ration.
Now, what about, while you were on Hospital Hill, did you develop sort of trench lines or trenches, or did you?
We dug trenches.
Well, they actually...
It was very difficult digging, actually. The ground was very rough. But we did, because of the shelling, it was necessary to add some section. And so using these little tower things, what do they call them?
Entrenching tools.
Entrenching tools, that's right. We just skipped trenches, but by and large they weren't any deeper than that.
So about 2 foot six,
yeah.
3 foot at the most.
2 foot six, yeah.
And were they interconnected? Or I mean, would there be a trench line, or was it just interconnected slit odd slit trenches?
No, they were laid out something like this.
You'll have to describe it. They can't hear on
if
the
you're a section. If you're a section of six, you do that.
So
you'd have three trenches with two men in each, set out in triangular fashion. And then, as far as the tomb is concerned, each three would correspond again in a similar triangular fashion. So you had that, and that. So we had nine slit trenches, as far as possible, set out so that they didn't overlap each other. And so
they had a clear field ahead.
Could be taken that way.
What was the reason for not just digging one trench, as for instance they had in the First World War? Or would you know what it was, or you just do what you were told?
Well, I think partly was the thing is the war tactics were mobile tactics largely, and even though you were in defence, you were in fact hoping that you'd be able to move quickly, and if you had to build the sort of trenches they did in the First World War, they took an awful lot of digging, an awful lot of building, and we never had that sort of time. So we would have, I imagine we'd have made better trenches if we had a bit of time. What we always did, mind you, with these trenches, where we're on rocky ground like this, we'd been build sangers round them, so you'd build up round them stones, loose stone that you could get a hold of, and so you put them a bit higher than you could dig into the ground. But it wasn't easy.
Now, you mentioned the shell fire early on. Did that continue throughout the time you were on the hill, or mortar fire, shell fire?
Yes, so we endured a certain amount of shelling nearly all the time on Aspen Hill. But it was fairly distant.
What about any air attacks? Or was it?
We didn't have any hospital air attacks. That I remember, not that I remember. I'm sure we didn't.
Anything now? So, what's the next thing that happened on? Anything else happened at Hospital Hill before the line moved forward?
Not, I think, that concerned me. And I don't remember. No, I don't think when we came down off Hospital Hill and went a little bit further towards the Vietri Valley. And at that stage, one of our companies, and I think it was B, was sent forward onto a hill, top end of the Vietri Valley, looking towards Nichols. And that was probably about a couple of miles up the valley. They got onto that hill in a night operation, slipped on. And we were in defensive positions, the bottom end of the valley.